Operator, and with that, I would like to call, are we recording? There we go. Great. Great. I'd like to call the April 4th meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee to order. And I will begin the meeting by entertaining a motion to approve the March 7th meeting minutes.
So moved.
Motion approved. Motion by Legislator Kitchen. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Legislator Lopez. Any discussion on the minutes? All right. All those in favor of approving the March 7th minutes?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Those are approved. And we're going to go right into resolutions. Just to remind everyone, I'm going to read the resolution title. We're going to have discussion, and then when we're ready to move into a vote, that's when we'll take a motion to approve. So resolution 157, creating and funding a position for the Climate Justice Fellowship, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget through the Youth Bureau. And I will defer to Deputy Executive Contreras to give us some background.
So this is a position that's funded, grant funded through NYSERDA. The NYSERDA Climate Justice Fellowship will fund $37,000 of a fellow's salary. In further discussion, we thought $37,000 for a full-time job is difficult in the area, so we're offering a county share to bring the position up to $53,700, which matches what the affiliated position in employment and training. So this person, we're putting them in the Youth Bureau. It's a one-year position. The reason for putting them in the Youth Bureau is because the Climate Corps will be housed in the Youth Bureau, and we're hoping that we'll be asking this person to help with that. In addition to the Climate Corps, they'll also help to develop the Climate Justice Plan with our Chief Diversity Officer and our Department of the Environment, and they'll help with all the elements of executive order.
Any questions? Any points of discussion? And this is in the, was this type of, like, was the Climate Justice Fellowship, which isn't a new thing, we did that last year as well, right? Right, but I'm saying I'm thinking of...
The Climate Corps is the second year.
That's what I was thinking of. And is that related to this at all?
Yeah. So the Climate Corps is the next resolution.
Right.
They will be, the Climate Justice Fellow will help to coordinate and manage them.
And, that's all going to happen, and that's why this is in the Youth Bureau. Okay. Very good. That makes sense. All right, any other questions? All right, then I will entertain a motion to advance this resolution.
Motion.
All right, moved by Legislator Bork and seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? 157 is unanimous. Resolution 158, moving the Climate Corps interns to the Youth Bureau, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget. And again, Deputy Executive Contreras.
So we are trying to create a division in the Youth Bureau to house all the Climate Corps interns. Last year they were divided up among all the departments, and it's just a little more difficult administratively to do it that way. So this year, again, we're putting them on the Youth Bureau. We're going to have the Climate Fellow help to coordinate the program. But basically, this is a summer internship program to train young people in how to be climate stewards and also working in public service. So they will work with a variety of departments, including aging, veteran services, our office, public works, DFS, economic development, on different climate-related projects, and then at the end they'll do a presentation for the legislature as they did last year. And let's see, what else can I share? I mean, I'll stop there.
Any questions from the committee? Yep, Legislator Collins.
So to me, the way I'm reading this, we're moving money from one to another. Is that the same, it's the same money?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure I'm reading it right.
Any other questions? We did get a really nice presentation from the last round of participants last year, so it was pretty cool. All right. Well, if there's no further discussion, then I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 158.
Move it.
All right. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. 158 is advanced unanimously. Resolution 187, approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 entered into by the county with Westchester County Healthcare Corporation doing business as Westchester Medical Center Health Alliance Hospital Mary's Avenue Campus, the Department of Health. I will defer to the our representative from the Department of Health.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. For those that don't know me, I am Tom Gibney. I am the Deputy Director for Administration. For the health department, this contract that we're presenting, as you know, we don't have a county morgue. We go out for services. We utilize Westchester Health Alliance to use their facilities as well as their services. This contract here, the past couple of years, we've been doing amending the contract for 1 year at a time. So those who have been in this committee for a while, I see we were probably just talking about this. We're actually proposing to do a 3 year term on the contract just to get ahead of it. It seems like we're always trying to negotiate. With that being said, it is anticipated that obviously each year will be over $50,000. For 2024, it works out to be about $117,150 per quarter. And that is what we pay the forensic pathologists as well as their assistant, the deaner, to perform whatever services needed to be provided. Whether we have one autopsy a day, 10 autopsies a day, that is a flat fee. Then we pay about $300 for the deaner, and as of this last contract, they required a COVID test. That is per case. So it works out to be about $538,862 a year. That is the cost for the pathology services. I mentioned the morgue. Morgue services, we pay $176 per decedent, and that is for a week worth of storage. If it goes beyond that, it's an extra $100. We estimate that to be about $40,000. Just as a guide, last year we came in at $38,800. Part of the autopsy, you have histology and toxicology testing. Again, there's a whole gamut of tests that can be ordered on toxicology that is sent out to a lab. Last year we budgeted $70,000 and we actually came in at $85,000. So we're a little under budget there. But high level, that is sort of what's expected for the contract. There will be incremental increases over the 3 years. Yes.
Great. Thank you. Legislator Collins?
I don't understand how we have a resolution that has no number that says more than 50,000.
I'm with Legislator Collins. I was asking a question. Mm-hmm.
There's no final number. I see.
Yeah. So do you want to speak
sure.
to that, Deputy
so,
Director?
So the contract is considered a rate contract because it's driven by the number of autopsies that are done. Like our office supply contract, there's not an amount on the contract, but it gives all individual amounts on everything that's in it. So this contract here will have a listing of everything that's outlined as far as costs. There is, I will mention this, this contract is set to expire April 30th, the end of this month. The contract is still needing to be presented to the vendor for review, but this is what the contract is gonna be.
Yeah,
I have some questions just because I'm a new legislator. You're telling me we don't have a county morgue.
Correct.
But we're mentioning Mary's Avenue campus, is that?
So the hospital.
Is the morgue, the physical morgue there?
Yes.
But Westchester, I understand, owns it. So
correct.
I also understand or heard that Westchester Medical Center may not have full operation over the Mary's Avenue campus. That there's rumors out there that the state could take over. I understood what I'm hearing, right? And maybe I'm wrong.
There's whispers.
Right. I mean, I talk to people that are within the system, right? So if we approve this now for 3 years and Westchester doesn't own it next year, the year after, why not keep it 1 year and see, you know, instead of going 3 years because we might pay, I don't know. Is there language in the contract that says?
Yeah, so all the contracts that we have.
Once you don't own or have control over Benny Hospital anymore, Kingston Hospital, slash Benedictine, this contract is null and void.
So the contract is for services performed. So if there are no services performed, there's nothing to be billed. So it's not a, you know, if they're not performed.
You said it again.
It's for services performed.
Right.
So if there's no services, let's say the hospital shuts down for, you know, they don't have.
Understood.
There wouldn't be any autopsy to be performed, so there wouldn't be any, like it'd be a fee for service.
It would be the invoices.
Right. And all of our contracts have language in it for us to be able to get out of.
Right.
Not just this one specifically.
Understood.
Do you have any further questions?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, so I'll go to the legislator.
Thank you. So, so in the case, in the event that there was not the provider we were contracted with no longer exists or is able to maintain their end of the contract, but that money is allocated for that contract, what then, how do we, what's the provision to move that money so that we can then go wherever it is we need to go after that? That's one question. My other question is, what's the cost-benefit analysis of contracting out for the service versus having a more of the county control?
Good point, Legislator Harmon, because they were on my mind too.
We have been doing a cost-benefit analysis on insourcing this contract. Specifically the personnel, because right now we're contracting for a forensic pathologist at WNC rather than hiring our own. The forensic pathologists are extremely expensive. They get paid up to hundreds of thousands a year, but that is because there's a shortage nationally. And it's much more cost effective to contract with a hospital network who's forensic pathologists we can use when we need, when we can call upon them, as opposed to having our own in-house who we pay for their full salary. When it comes to a morgue, that would be a huge capital expense. And my understanding is there's been analyses over the years of whether we should build our own morgue. They have not been deemed to be more cost effective than contracting with a hospital. But it's something that we continue to keep our eye on for the future because we are reliant on a hospital. And it's something that we do discuss, you know, we discuss from time to time with neighboring counties whether a street service might be make more sense. Mm-hmm. But it's hard because depending on where you are in the county, you know, another county is way too far away to deliver a seat into as a morgue. So it's very geography dependent. But as of right now, this is the best option.
So I'm going to go to Legislator Collins next, and then Legislator Pitching for some time.
So I also am taking understand that we have to approve this by the end of this month. Otherwise, we no longer have morgue services.
I feel like we're under duress.
Which seems to be, why did this not come in earlier to us so we can actually think about it? Like, you got to pass this now, otherwise we're going to work services
right.
Beginning May 1st.
I don't personally anticipate that they would necessarily, but as far as the timing goes.
I'm not really sure why it's taken so long. I mean, anyways, it's like I said, there was a decision for the contract to be brought to the committee tonight. We presented the contract back in January. I'm not really sure why it hasn't gotten to the vendor for us to have the conversation earlier.
Our contracting process is tough sometimes. We have some staffing shortages.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in to say that this is one of, I've somehow my most common constituent complaint has become county contracts taking a long time. You know, that's a big concern, and I want to highlight that it's not just this contract, but there are other contracts, particularly our contracts with other municipalities based on initiatives that, you know, we as a legislature have helped put in motion, have a lot of relationships with those municipalities that, you know, we need to maintain as partners, and the contracting process has been very painful. So I'm confident that it's not the fault of the health department. I'll say that much.
Thank you.
Legislator Kitchen.
Yeah, so has anybody ever asked for a question
analysis before?
Yes.
I mean, I've never seen one, so I didn't know.
2 years ago, when the contract was increased for the first time, for 5 years it was flat. And then 2 years ago, we increased it for the first time because they didn't even have CPI built into their contract.
Right.
So at the time, we did approximately.
So we understand that the population in Ulster County, the growth has gone up considerably. Can you tell me where the nearest morgue is outside of around here?
I think Dutchess County has a morgue, Orange County.
And this morgue that we have is in Weston?
This morgue is in Kingston.
It's in Kingston, but it's ran by Weston.
By Westchester Medical.
And you said you've had discussions in the past about shared services with different counties?
Yes, when it's come up, because Westchester Medical Center has brought up in the past that our county...
Because Rhinebeck's right across, Northern Dutchess is right across there.
The issue with that is Dutchess County also has their own capacity issues, but at the time we talked to them, they were actually sharing with Rensselaer, I believe. So it's a tough
They skipped
issue.
A few counties then.
Yeah. Rensselaer had a vacancy. So it's a tough issue because forensic pathologists are so...
You said it before, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously. So
nobody's getting into that field of work.
No, unfortunately. I mean, I don't know. It's a hard field
to track. All right.
Any other questions or discussion?
No, I just think maybe down the road in a year or two, we should do another cost analysis, maybe. I don't know.
I'll also share that when this contract was increased and when we passed it on a one-year basis last time, these questions came up, and it just became clear that this was such a it was just such a logistical challenge because it's a physical morgue. But I will also share that when during like 2020, 2021, 2022, there was a lot of many of us were very upset at Westchester Medical because of the mental health bed situations, and we held up a lot of their resolutions, and we really pressed the county executive's team at the time to really cost out bringing some of these things in-house and really press them on like what could we just the vibe at that time was very much we don't want to do anything with these guys, we don't want to give them any contracts, and that has nothing to do with the benefit of doing it in-house, but we were just so upset with that organization. I think things are a little bit different now for a variety of reasons, and I'm happy to say a bunch of us got to tour the new mental health facility, but in any event, I don't think there's any vendor that's had more scrutiny of what could we bring in-house than this one.
It just seems to me, with your permission, yeah, we've had hospital issues here for a long time. Mental health, plus, you know, Kingston Hospital's shutting down and going, putting all the money into Benedictine and Westchester. And now rumors of the state maybe taking over, possibly, you know. I just hope that we can provide better services to our residents, you know, going forward. Especially in the mental health, like I was really impressed by the earlier meeting with the issues that came up with mental health and what the county's doing to address some of those issues.
Well, if there's no further discussion on this particular resolution, then I will ask for a motion to adopt it. Right, moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that advances unanimously. We now move on to Resolution 178, rescinding Resolution Number 425 of 2021, Ulster County Policy Requiring Crisis Respite Houses in Ulster County through the Department of Health. And I suspect I should start with Deputy Executive Contreras on this.
Sure, yes. And apologies to everybody who was in the best part of all of this, but for the folks who are new to this meeting, Resolution 425 to establish crisis respite centers was passed it was co-sponsored by Legislator Criswell and Legislator Eve Walter. In trying to implement that policy, we ran into a number of issues, which we can go over. I'm pretty sure everybody was provided the memo that we wrote explaining them as well. So several months ago, we started to have discussions with Legislator Criswell as a co-sponsor and basically bringing to light some of the issues that we were facing. Basically, they come down to one is capacity. There is a roadhouse in Walden that is available for Ulster County residents. It's not used fully right now, and it's also expanding. So given that, we didn't think that this would be the best use of ongoing county funding. On that note, when we were looking at the most recent budget proposals we were getting, what they were showing was that the crisis residents would require probably an ongoing significant county funding annually because it wouldn't be fully self-sustainable. So given that the current facility is underutilized and expanding, again, we didn't think it was the best use of county dollars. Thirdly, originally the resolution did contemplate multiple houses in Ulster County, and the idea was that we would be able to use foreclosed properties, turn them into these respite houses, and they would pay for themselves. But when we're looking at the budget proposals from the vendor, again, that's not the case. It would be really hard to open even one house, and even one house would require ongoing financial subsidy. So, and then I think the fourth point I'd like to make is that one of our local nonprofits has applied for funding from the Office of Mental Health, state funding for Gateway. They've applied for state funding for a short-term transitional residence, which is basically a better version in some ways than the crisis residence, because it would serve a lot of the same population, but would allow them to stay for up to 120 days rather than less than a month. That funding would also come with funding for both renovations and operating costs.
How many beds?
So,
Eric, let's hear your
the number of beds is dependent on the application, and then the state would look at the need. It's based on need. So they would come back and grant a number of beds based on what they see as what we can substantiate as a need. So those are the main reasons that we decided to put forth this resolution. At the same time, we're seeing urgent need for clinical services for youth, and that's why the bulk of the alternative proposal is for youth and family.
Lisa,
do
you
want to
ask?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Not in favor of this. I'm not in favor of a house being in Walden, which is down by Orange County, right? That nobody around here even knows about, and I hope we're not giving them money. Because nobody knows.
We're not, no.
But you only have to go very far from here to see there's a mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that wherever all the money in this county is going, whatever nonprofits is going to, the most serious issue we're facing is mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a respite house, I know you spoke about Gabe, but I think a respite house would start with one. These people need a place to go other than the streets and the benches of Broadway. And I don't care what it costs. I think we need something. We need a respite house. I fight for mental health. That's one of my biggest things.
Right.
I don't agree with this. This county spends a lot of money on other things it shouldn't. Mental health is not its priority. That's how I'm starting to feel. That's all I got to say.
I'll let you elaborate, but all of the alternatives are staying within the area of mental health.
I understand. Children and youth, that's great. Crisis center at the hospital, that's great. I just want to see a program. I mean, let's not forget how we got rid of the mental health facility a few years. We know who was behind that at the Benedictine Hospital, because people had to get sent down to Westchester, right? And parks unknown, where I've had to travel hours every single day to see people I know. Just not right. And what I'm told, maybe it's not true, but the bathrooms that came out of the old mental health facility, the same shower bins went back in the mental health facility when they renovated the hospital. I just don't think we're doing enough to help these people. It's a big problem, not only in here, New York State, throughout the country, but mental health issues lead to so many more problems that cost so many more, much more money. It's something I advocate for as a patient, so forgive me if I seem
understand, and I think hopefully Jolene or Tara can elaborate on the short-term transitional residence, which again, there is an application out. We will find out if we get it. But if we do, it is very similar to a crisis respite program, but would allow people to stay there for longer.
So I hear everything you're saying. Specifically in parts of how the crisis respite funds and where they came from were for the ARPA funding, which again, you know, in the last meeting, it's a very specific timeline for turnaround. And we had worked really diligently and clearly with the provider that applied for the SOQ that would open up a crisis respite, that we really, really wanted to find a location. That became extremely difficult. And we really wanted to provide it in areas that weren't just Kingston. You know, we looked at multiple areas. The difficulty with the crisis respite, especially with the timeline we're looking at, is to license that facility. It needs to be ADA accessible. It needs to be protected under PADA-BAN law, so it's zoned properly, because the state really wants to see for that licensure, for you to get that licensure to bill Medicaid, for it to be sustainable, sure, that it is in a community that isn't outside of the community, right? It's in a residential neighborhood. That comes into barriers with community members maybe not wanting that in their neighborhood.
Yeah, it's
totally in agreement that the services is needed, but knowing that we only have a certain period of time to get the contract and spend this funding to go through all those avenues with all of these barriers, those were some other things that were a big concern. As far as this short-term transitional residence, it operates similar to a crisis respite in the fact that someone could be in a housing facility right now that's overseen by OMH. They're already having a housing worker. They're struggling in that housing apartment, let's say. That person is able to, along with homeless individuals, along with people coming out of the hospital and coming out of jail, to access this short-term residence for up to 20 days and get wraparound services. So that includes similar to what they would already get at the crisis respite, which is no more than 28 days. And that's if your insurance would approve 28 days. Your insurance is dictating how long you could stay there based on your evaluation. Where you can, if you're entered into the program with little barriers for short-term crisis, short-term residence, which is what Gateway applied for, you could stay up to 20 days, still hold on to your apartment, not lose your apartment, and then enter back into homelessness. So it's really meant to be getting a service plus also providing housing to get to that next step and evaluate where someone is. So I agree with you. You know, there is a big need for mental health services, but what we're really hoping to do with the alternative for crisis respite funds, which we'll talk about at some point, is really to determine then, especially through the behavioral health needs assessment, what makes the most sense financially and for the community, and where should it be? You know, I think right now,
So I do want to go to Legislator Collins, who's been...
Just one last question. I'm going to finish here. Have you ever considered a public and private partnership when it comes to mental health?
A lot of our services are basically a public-private partnership, mm-hmm. and that's one of the genesis.
Well, I see the homes every day that they're living in, yeah, because that's what I do for a living. It's not good, but anyway.
We're basically contracting all of our, most all of our mental health services right now,
and that is a
public-private partnership.
Yeah. All I can say is the county's doing a lot more than it has been doing, and I appreciate that. I'm not going to take anybody else's time more up, and I respectfully... Mr. Collins to share what he's got.
So we'll go with Legislator Collins and then Legislator Lopez. I do want to mention, just because you mentioned it, that we did tour the facility for the mental health beds, and the showers are absolutely new.
That's good to know, because yeah. I was told something else.
Everything there is very, very nice. The only thing they kept was this beautiful floor.
They kept something, okay.
Cool. So.
Well, thank you for correcting me.
Yep.
I appreciate that.
Yep.
Sometimes you get information it's not fully correct, but thank you.
I completely agree. Legislator Collins.
So my understanding of this resolution from the previous meeting and from the conversation at this meeting is that the respite houses are not being fully utilized, and putting money into something that isn't being fully utilized is probably a waste of that money. If we can put it someplace else, it would be more useful. And that's the intention of taking this money away from respite houses that aren't being fully utilized. I fully support Legislative Kitchen's belief that we need mental health services. We also need to make sure those mental health services are put someplace where they're going to be effective. So my understanding is that we're trying to move money from where it's not necessarily going to be effective, where it's going to be more effective. Is that true understanding?
Correct. And there's another piece to this. The licensing process can take quite a bit of time, and the vendor that was looking to open up the crisis rep that currently is provisionally licensed for three other locations in three other counties for a couple of years now. So the idea of opening another house in Ulster when they have one in Orange that's underutilized serving Ulster that has also still waiting on that process to get licensed is some concern, because that would also mean that once this ARPA funding was, you know, that ran out, county contribution would have to step in, because Medicaid, if not licensed or if they're not at capacity, would be able to self-sustain in some way. And then you then invested all of this money into this location that you would then have to find money to get self-sustaining. And then also hope that the need is being met where people are coming in with insurance to self-sustain as well. It could be a complicated model, and you want to make sure you have at least 8 bedrooms, which is like the sweet spot, to be able to sustain that program. But to find a location with 8 bedrooms for the amount that we're working with in this environment, it's extremely difficult, along with all the other ADA zoning things that,
you know, you can ask a follow-up, go ahead.
So also, in the previous meeting, there was a question asked that clarified that residents of Ulster County are eligible to use the beds in the other county, correct?
Correct. Yep.
All right, Legislator Lopez.
My question was answered.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Any other questions, comments, or discussion? I'll just mention that I think this is the right move, if for no other reason than that we can always revisit this after the behavioral health needs assessment, number one. And number two, like, these ARPA initiatives that are not, like, that are hitting friction, if, you know, we need to adjust, because there's limited time on being able to reallocate that money. So I think this is the right move. All right. With that, I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 178. Okay. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Deputy Chair Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
And all those opposed? Okay, so we are going to be unanimous on this, because I do want, Legislator Kitchen, you mentioned that you didn't want to support it, which you can always change your mind on the floor.
Here's the situation. You know, whether I think it should go towards one mental health program or another, I'm just happy it's going towards mental health.
Great, and that's, I think,
and that, gonna, that's something like I told you, I'm happy. Like I said before, that we're talking about mental health, and I'm happy about that.
We have good news for you. We're going to talk about it in Resolution
178. So wait, there's more.
So if I may. So that one will go down unanimous, and or advance unanimous. Resolution 179, amending the 2024 budget to implement Resolution Number 77 of 2023, establishing a policy to prioritize the mental and behavioral health needs assessment and determining a 5-year plan. And again, I will defer to Deputy Executive Contreras to kick us off on this part of the discussion.
Sure. So this resolution was advanced by former legislators Walter and Bartel last year. And what they really wanted was to get a better sense, I think you said a little bit earlier, of what services the county should be providing, but then also what should we be providing in-house versus contract. So that speaks a little bit to the public, private partnership
that
we talked about earlier. As some of you know, in the past, we used to provide mental health services directly, and then we started to contract with nonprofits to provide them. So that was really the impetus for this resolution. We did an RFP. We got great proposals from some organizations who have good experience doing these needs assessments and providing recommendations to other localities. So this would, if this was approved, we would be able to execute the contract.
All right, any questions from the committee? So just to reiterate that the basis for this resolution already passed through this body, and this is just allocating some of the money that we're freeing up with the prior resolution.
Yep.
All right, well then I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution 179.
I'll move.
Moved by Legislator Harmon and seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 180, amending the 2024 budget to fund the mental health initiative to secure services for a children's mental health clinic through the Department of Mental Health. And again, I will defer, or maybe defer to Commissioner McDonald.
Sure.
All right.
So our hope is to be able to, well, we actually have an RFP drafted and would like to be able to identify a community partner to either have a satellite of a licensed clinic that they have now or to do a freestanding clinic for specific to youth and adolescents and their families. The licensure would probably, we would advocate for the license to be from 5 to 26, which is allowable as private insurance allows for you to hold on to your children up until the age of 26, so that there would be an opportunity for kids that have been at the this particular clinic and to be held on to for transitional age services and maintain that connection. We're thinking probably the clinic will be a smaller clinic, maybe around 100 kids, 1,200 kids per year. We are looking for the third floor at 368 to offer a space and also possibly Trudy Barber and Ellisville for satellites. Again, small, but what we're hoping to be able to do is to accomplish two things. One is to increase access to the service so that the connection can be made quicker. Right now, on average, folks are waiting about 30 days from the time of their first intake to when they're actually enrolled in the clinic. So we're hoping to chop that down. And then we're also hoping to be able to give opportunity for choice. Right now, we have one main children's provider, Aster Services for Children, and though they have been a wonderful partner, they're the only choice. And we hear a lot of times from our families, especially if you have maybe a negative experience, but you have another child that you would need to get support from, I don't want to go to Aster, do I have any other options? And most times we're saying no. So we're really wanting to be able to offer more options to our residents, children and families.
Thank you. Yep, Legislator Collins.
A couple of questions. One, you talked about two locations, one in Ellenville and one in potentially Kingston, but potential locations. There was a conversation in the early meeting about other areas of the county and accessibility. Is there a possibility of looking into that with this contract, or is that not a possibility?
Absolutely a possibility. One of the reasons, as you can imagine, because we own the building and have the ability to be reasonable with the amount of rent that we're asking for, we were going to start with those. If the provider is able to be sustainable within 2 years, they can certainly look to be able to get a satellite in the southern part of the county, but their billables would have to cover whatever rent would be towards their physical space.
We seem to be very Kingston heavy in a lot of things we do here in services, and I want to make sure that we have a larger county than just Kingston. So the other question I have is, because this is ARPA funded, are we positive that we can contract this by the deadline?
Feeling fairly confident. As Jolene had mentioned in the ARPA committee, we've already started to have some conversations. We wanted to make sure that there were partners that were willing to come to the table before even going down this road. So we've had some conversations. The RFP is drafted. We'd really like to be able to bring somebody on that already has a license. Maybe not, it doesn't necessarily have to be in Ulster County, but if you have a prior relationship with the Office of Mental Health, then the process of getting another operating certificate for another location is much easier than if you're introducing yourself to OMH. So if we're able to get someone that has a license, or maybe they can even do a satellite here, which would cut down the amount of time even more, we'll be able to get it.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, well, then I would entertain a motion to adopt
the resolution. Make the motion.
All right, moved by Legislator Kitchen and seconded by Legislator Harbin. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 181, amending the 2024 budget to enter into an interdepartmental agreement with the Sheriff's Department to provide security for the Center for Well-Being for 1 year. The Department of Mental Health. Happy to defer to you, Commissioner Donald.
And I'm actually going to lean on our project director.
Okay,
great. A lot of them will track that one. Mm-hmm.
You know, so really, this resolution is pretty self-explanatory. At the Stabilization Center, you know, there is a need for security. We've done some research and looking at external providers compared to our Sheriff's Department. We'd really like to continue a collaborative effort with the Sheriff's on having their unarmed guards at the center for security. They're not going to be the first point of contact when people are coming into the center. They're really going to be there kind of feel safe and secure. Another reason why we really want to use the sheriffs, it's mandated that there's a separate entrance for police to be able to access a separate point if they're bringing someone from the community into the Stabilization Center. So if they're interacting with someone in the community, they're not doing well, you know, there's not really a need for them to go to the emergency room, but the police find that, you know, they could use some help. They could offer that help, transport them to the center, they'd be welcomed into the center. We're really hoping to lean on the sheriffs as a collaborative effort to encourage police to utilize the center as a resource. You know, that takes some buy-in. You know, a lot of police are, well, what's going to be different? We really hope to kind of drive home that this is a welcoming environment to offer them support as well as the people that they're seeing in the community. So the sheriffs just seems like a really nice match for our security to also then work with the access point for the police entrance on the other end of the building. The sheriff's been fully on board. They're willing to move forward as quickly as possible with hiring staff. They're also willing to assist with the staff that are chosen for the center to engage with our department on getting training that is really trauma-informed, de-escalation, and really engaging with the people that are on site in a way that look differently than maybe some other security in some other places. And we're excited about that. We really want them to be a part of the team and work well with you know, the very diverse team that's going to be in the center of peers, CASAC, social workers, nurses, all the people that will be on site. So.
Yep, Commissioner McCullough. Mm-hmm. The security is only for your program, your department?
Oh. So there, 368 right now is a county-owned building with four floors. We currently have a security that the sheriff's office has provided us for our floor right now. This security would do rounds throughout the building, okay. But they would mainly be, they would, one, work out of the first floor and be, you know, directly supporting the crisis stabilization. But they would have access, there will be cameras on other floors because you do have other services there. So the second floor, you have an outpatient mental health detox, mental health urgent care, Ms. Samadhi, who does the outpatient substance use services. And then ideally, if we have the youth clinic on the third floor, they would also be able to support those different community providers and then actually work with them and collaborate who's coming in and out of the building. And so it would, you know, it would be a nice fusion of all those things together.
Yep. Do you have a follow-up with that?
Okay. So do you see the other programs chipping in some way to help pay for this security at some point?
Right now, other programs within the building do pay rent to the county. But regardless, you know, the Department of Mental Health is on the fourth floor currently, and this will be a 24/7 site. I think the population we're serving and the community providers that are going to be included in the Center for Wellbeing, it makes sense that there's 24/7 security for safety for not just community members, but also for staff as well. And there is a very, very heavy hand from OMH and OASIS that there is a divide between youth and adults in the center. And so this is something that the security, you know, if there was ever to be an issue, would be, you know, there and present. Hope that answers your question.
Legislator Collins?
So my guess is that some of the people that might want to use this facility might be police force. So I'm just concerned about that they might go into this facility, they might see a sheriff's officer, and then walk back out. Is there concern about what could happen if the sheriff's office, you know, if they're going high?
Right. So
how does that work out?
Okay. So it's a very, very great question. So there will be a security booth. I don't know. Hopefully everyone can come to 368 at some point. We're starting construction.
Hold on. Legislator Kitchen, raise your hand when you have a question, please.
Understood. Sorry, legislator.
So the medical arts professional medical building on 368 Broadway if you've parked in the parking lot in the back, you'll see an entrance there. When you go into that entrance, there will be security on the right that will have access to security cameras that will be on every floor in and outside of the building. Anyone that needs to access services on any other floor will be accessible through an elevator through there. The Department of Mental Health can receive community members along with the second and third floor. There will be a door to the right of the elevators, which you will see at some point, which will have a buzzer. Someone can from the community can directly walk up to that door, ring a doorbell, and a peer will come and greet them. It is not going to be it's not going to be a direction of the security guards to interact with someone coming into the center. They should be able to go straight past them. Mm-hmm. And it's not in their eye line, they're going straight, and ring the doorbell and be entered in. There will be police entrances on the side of the building where people can enter separately, and again, that it comes down to licensure and the children there. But the first point of access, it's actually going to be discouraged that security are going to interact with someone coming into the center. The first point of contact always should be a peer that welcomes them in to the waiting room, gets them settled. There's lockers, there's laundry, there's showers if needed, but yeah, they shouldn't be interacting with them whatsoever, and they're not going to be harmed.
Any other questions? I have a question. We're always going to need security there, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. This is ARPA funds, it's a one-time funding source, so can you speak to the sustainability of the funding?
Right. So we've been in talks with the county exec's office, and we are fully aware that down the road we are going to have to sustains the security at this building. But there is a way to use the ARPA funding through an interdepartment agreement where we can now share the funding with the sheriffs, provide the service, and support the center. So it is an allowable use, and it's an urgent use because we are coming very close to we just had our construction kickoff meeting this past Tuesday. We are starting construction at the end of this month. And there should be a quick turnaround by early fall where the construction is complete. And knowing with the staffing shortages that we're experiencing across New York State, we would really like to get this funding right now approved and get those officers hired and trained to support the center in the most appropriate way.
I guess long term, we'd have to keep this in mind for budgeting.
Whose budget does this live in going forward?
This would be the sheriff. This is the sheriff's budget.
Okay, so like we would expect that when this money is expended, we would see this in his budget every year after.
Unless we decide to go with a security firm for some reason, but I don't think that.
Okay. Understood. Legislator Collins.
Just follow up on that, though. No matter whether it's the sheriff's or someone else, we're going to have this expense regardless. Mm-hmm. So it's nothing that we're not committing to something now that wouldn't otherwise need to be committed.
Right. That's a good point. Any other questions? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 181.
Motion.
Moved by Legislator Corcoran and seconded by Legislator Kitchen. Great. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? My list is a little bit long. Okay, here we go. Resolution number 182, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $368,000 entered into by the county with LaSalle School, Inc. through the Department of Mental Health. And I will defer to Commissioner McDonald to get us started here.
Absolutely. So the vision for the Mental Health in Schools program was to be able to accomplish a few things. One was to support our schools within the walls of the school and then bridge into the community. So we have many, many case management and linkage opportunities that we offer through our contracted providers, through our children's SOAS, single point of access. There's certainly clinic, there's lots of opportunity, but they are challenged by one, needing to have reach the bar of being in crisis or having a diagnosis or having the background in having a severe emotional disturbance as a child so that you can get Medicaid, you can be eligible for these services. For mental health in schools, we didn't want kids to have to reach that bar in order to get the diagnosis, in order to get the service. We wanted to catch the kids that don't come to the clinics. We wanted to catch the kids that we don't get SOA applications for because they don't reach that level. And this program it's the first in my 25 plus years of doing this work where we had a mission and it met its mission 100%. mental health in schools is seeing kids that we would normally not see. They're providing them clinical services in the community. They're providing them transportation. They're taking them on respite. They're giving them great clinical assessments so that they can then reach for those other services that will come through SPOA. And if they don't come to us, then they're able to be discharged to just natural services within the community. ARPA, the original funding model was a combination of ARPA money and opioid settlement funds. We had an 18-month contract to begin with. There was a slow start because of staffing ramping up that was right on the tail end of the stabilizing part of the pandemic when lots of clinicians were still wanting to do telehealth. Nobody wants to go into the clinic or, heaven forbid, go into the community. So recruitment was very, very difficult. But I want to say they have been up and ramped going through all of the nine school districts for the past year. Because there was a slow start, we didn't utilize all of the funds for the first 18 months. So in order to do our budget for 2024, we had leftover ARPA money, very little. We still have opioid settlement funds, but that left us with a deficit of $368,000. Based on the success of the program, our county executive made the commitment to meet that shortfall with county contribution, and that's what this.
I am confused about the county contribution because the chart that the table that I see on our resolution says 77% federal, 23% state, which doesn't leave a county contribution. But that might be, is that an error?
That may be for overall the program, 77% ARPA funding.
Is that
that's what it was originally.
But the 23% is the state, and that was the OASIS.
Opioid funding. Right.
And so, but the funding source for this
is
county.
Contribution. So
okay, so this table was probably copied over and it's not accurate. Okay.
Probably.
Understood. But the everything else I'm assuming is correct here in terms of the cost here. I mean, the total, you know, the additional amount here. So this is a $368,000 as a county contribution.
That is correct.
Okay. And it's coming from where? This is the ARPA. This is additional ARPA funding, or what? This is unrelated to the past few resolutions.
It is unrelated.
So this is coming from
straight from the county coffers.
Okay.
As far as I understand.
Understood. Sorry for that.
Yep. Minister Clinton.
I just want to say thank you. I'm one of the nine school buildings that received the services, and it is working highly effectively. I see the direct impact. I know we had a slow start to begin with. We are allotted 10 spots for our students in our building. We are always filling all 10 of those spots, and my only complaint is that we would need more. There is a tremendous need. I, along with you, feel that mental health, it needs to be a priority. Addressing students, very vulnerable population at school, making those connections, working with the program. My counselors align with the counselors that come in from LaSalle. I sit in those meetings to hear how things are going. And it's just a tremendous program. So I just wanted to stay and advocate for it because, again, I see it up close and personal. And I see the difference that it makes for students and families. It eliminates some of the red tape that goes along with it. It takes away some of the stigma for some of the families that are resistant to allowing their children to receive mental health supports. They do make those connections with the students, whether it's taking them to Starbucks or to get a slice of pizza or bring a, I had a student who they actually brought him to a funeral of another student that I had. So they were able to provide transportation to make those connections and to help families sometimes make those transitions to understanding what other services are available. So I just really want to say I see it firsthand, up close and personal, and it is working extremely well. I would just wish that we could actually have more spots because the increase in mental health needs since the pandemic have just exploded. And this is just allowing us, so literally we sometimes have to make that hard decision of who do we think is the next student in line that we want to give that next spot when something opens up to. So that's the reality on the ground of the program.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. Any other questions or points of discussion on this topic?
Chair, can I just say one thing?
Go for
just
it.
In terms of the red tape that you talk about, it's the connection to, it's that criteria having to jump it, right? It's the application. It's the, where is your psychosocial? It's the, you know, what where's your doctor, you know, saying that this is what you need? And that was exactly what we were trying to be able to avoid. So I thank you so much for that.
All right.
I'd like to. I'll make a motion to approve.
Wonderful. All right. So there's a motion on the table from Legislator Kitchen. We've got a second from Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Legislator McCullough, you're laughing at me.
I'm in favor.
All those in favor? Any opposed?
You kill yourself, man.
All right. No crosstalk, please. Resolution number 183, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget through the Department of Social Services. And I will defer to Commissioner Iposi to bring this for us.
Sure. This is a resolution to roll over ARPA funding that we received in 2023 for our Adult Protective Services unit. There was an unspent amount of $19,202. So we're requesting permission to be able to just move that into our 2024 budget, and the funding is utilized for discretionary purposes to assist our adult protective clients in a variety of different needs that they experience. We do things like purchase furniture that might be worn down. We make repairs at their residence that they may have been hesitant to be able to afford or had challenges arranging for contractors to come in and do. We frequently use this to do professional cleaning and sanitizing a lot of the homes of our clients who have been hoarding or experiencing mold or pest infestations. So we're really focusing, utilizing this funding amount to try to keep our adult protective clients safely in the residential location where they live.
Any questions? I have a question. The funding, so the funding, we're transferring it from 23 into 24. The way that the funding is, like the types of work that this funding is intended to, or the types of activities that this funding is intended for, that was true of this funding last year and it's true of this funding now. Like the funding source, or rather the purpose of the funding is the same. This was funding that we could have spent on these purposes last year, we just didn't spend it.
Yeah. Exactly right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And we have until September 20th of this year to spend this amount.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, well, then I will take entertain a motion to adopt 183. Motion moved by Legislator Corcoran and seconded by Legislator Collins. Wonderful. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution 184, authorizing execution of an agreement with the New York State Office of Children and Family Services, the Multidisciplinary Childhood Advocacy Center Program, and amending the 2024 Ulster County Operating Budget. This is for the Department of Social Services, and I will defer to Commissioner Iposi.
Thank you, Chairperson. So this is an additional amount of $49,999 that OCFS has made available to counties that operate FCACs or Children Advocacy Centers. So apparently they must have had some surplus funds available that they ended up allocating out at the beginning of this year. So we weren't aware that we were going to be receiving this amount. So any funds that we're receiving from OCFS for programs that we operate have to now be arrived at it being added to our budget through a resolution. So we're obviously grateful to be receiving this extra funding, and there's a variety of purposes that it can be utilized for. We're going to do things like updating some of the forensic interview materials that we have and purchase some culturally diverse anatomical dolls. We're going to get some additional cameras and laptops. It can also be used to provide specialized training. So we don't have everything arrived at yet, but you know, we will have many opportunities over the course of this year to spend these additional funds at our FCAC.
Questions? Any discussion? And I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 184. Moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 185, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $325,000 entered into by the county with Berkshire Farm Center for, and Services for Youth, Department of Social Services. And again, Commissioner Iaposa, if you could frame this for us.
Sure. So resolution number 185, and also the explanation that I'm giving will apply to resolution number 186. So Berkshire Farms is one of our residential treatment facilities, which means that it's a facility where we place foster children who present with significantly higher needs that make it not possible for them to be in traditional foster families or relative foster placements. And I'll spend a couple of minutes giving you some context here, because the nature of these contracts, particularly for the new legislatures, I think will be something that you'll see us revisiting at future meetings. Traditionally, and some of the recurring legislatures are familiar with some of this. So with all the residential treatment facilities that we potentially arrive at making placements with, we enter into contracts for two-year periods. And at this particular time, we actually have contracts with 21 different residential treatment facilities throughout the state. And what ends up happening is that, and similar to some of the other programs you heard about earlier, if we don't end up placing a child at one of these residential treatment facilities, no expenses are incurred and nothing is paid. The reason that we have so many contracts in effect with 21 facilities is that we can never predict what our need will be over any particular time frame. And we always have to be able to meet the responsibility of placing a child when a child becomes the subject of a court order that requires that they go into a residential treatment facility. So with regard to Resolution 185, we currently have a number of children at Berkshire. So the contract amount that we had originally entered into is now going to be exceeded, which is why we're requesting this additional increase. And the same will be true for Resolution number 186 with the Jewish Child Care Association of New York. And there's some unpredictability involved in this because, as I said earlier, we never know exactly how many children at any given time we'll have in residential treatment facilities. We have about 120 children in foster care as of today, so that means they're in the care and custody of the Department of Social Services. And of those 120 children, 18 are in residential treatment facilities. They only arrive at being in a residential treatment facility after what's called a qualified residential treatment plan is completed for them. And that's done within the first 60 days of their admission into a facility. And then during those 60 days, an independent assessor has to basically approve the plan, and then it is presented to a family court judge that's presiding over the case. And then for the following 9 months, as part of that child's permanency plan, the expectation is that they're able to remain at that residential treatment facility. They may be able to be discharged earlier if they are able to arrive at meeting milestones around their treatment and diagnosis, but this is generally how the process works. I guess I just wanted to give you some context to understand how this happens and what our needs are. And you know, this will be something that you'll see us bringing resolutions to you for when we have more children at a particular facility over a period of time that results in that contract needing to be increased.
So if I understand what you've just described, is we have contracts with a number of facilities. We may not use many of those facilities. So there might be a contract for a facility that we don't spend any money on.
Correct.
So instead of being able to just move that money from one to the other, you have to come to us to move the money. So you have to increase the budget for the one that we have someone, whereas we may not spend the money. I'm not sure I'm describing this well.
You're correct.
So, but it makes sense. So it's not like we're spending more money than we initially budgeted, but the overall, it's just it's going to one or two facilities instead of being spread out across all.
And another one of the dynamics involved in this is sometimes we might be faced with having to place a child in a, we call them RTFs, residential treatment facilities, and maybe they don't have any vacancies. So So on a given day when we anticipate having to make a placement, we may apply to 10 different facilities. Wait to hear back about which facilities might be able to have capacity and also might be able to have treatment programs that will meet the needs of that child.
Any other questions?
I have a question. What happens when kids age out of these residential treatment facilities?
Okay, so children that are in foster care age out upon arriving at their 18th birthday. So at that point, we are doing a lot of management and engagement with that particular child in connection with whatever their placement might be. And they can opt to remain in foster care until age 21. And there are a variety of different programs that are available. They can actually remain in the same placement, provided that it seems like a rational arrangement. They can go into what's called a SILT, a supported independent living plan, where maybe they find a location where they can reside, but they're still receiving services and engagement with us. So that's always an available option.
Thank you.
Yep. If
you reach out to 10 facilities and you don't necessarily go with the first one you hear from, right? What if you hear from 4 or 5? How do you choose which one to choose?
We have a good sense based on what needs a child presents with about which facilities have programs that might be a good fit. Most of the time, it's a capacity issue. So that's why we'll send out multiple applications. So, for instance, if we have a child that's been experiencing suicidal ideations and self-harm, we know that 7 facilities have specialized programs in that.
Okay.
We will probably submit applications to all 7, just for the purposes of making sure that we're going to be able to arrive at a placement. We also take into consideration other variables, you know, distance, the circumstances with regard to what was the reasons for the underlying placement with the Department of Social Services. Was it a surrender of the child? Was it voluntary? Was it pursuant to a JD? You know, so those are factors as well.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. So I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 185.
Motion.
Moved by Corcoran, second by Kitchen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 186, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $150,000 entered into by the county with Jewish Child Care Association of New York, the Department of Social Services, and Commissioner Iposi. This is the same situation.
Same exact explanation.
Yep.
Same underlying purposes.
Any other questions on this one? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt. Moved by Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator Kitchen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 167, establishing a policy to dedicate revenue generated from the collection of occupancy tax to housing and transportation initiatives from the Department of Finance. And I will defer to Deputy Executive Contreras. I'm also happy to talk about it as well.
You
can,
I think
yeah.
You have been more in the business.
That's totally fine. That's totally fine. I didn't even realize it was going to be coming directly from, specifically from the Department of Finance. But folks are probably aware that last year in the county executive's budget presentation and then in the budget, her budget presentation, she framed at the urging of many of us to allocate some of the funding that we received from occupancy tax, knowing that we were increasing the occupancy tax, which we did do, allocating some of that funding to housing. A number of us have been pushing for that for a long time. The conversation around occupancy tax has been happening for a long time. The county executive included that in her budget presentation and also included that some should be allocated for transportation, which I personally agree with as well. So this makes formal that allocation that she presented I can't remember exactly when it was first shared by her, but this would take of the total amount that's collected, it would take 25% of that amount and allocate it towards housing and 25% of that amount and allocate it towards the transportation initiatives. And so this would formally do that.
Was I mistaken that it's at some point there was a percentage for tourism, since tourism pretty much drives this?
So that is unchanged by this. So there's still 50% that isn't allocated by this, because it's just 25-25.
Okay.
The law that says, or like our you know, prior law that says that the, and Joanna, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but the allocation for tourism is not affected by this, I believe.
Correct. This
yep.
is the increase
okay.
over and above.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So make sure tourism gets their piece.
Yep. Yep. Legislator Collins.
So just trying to do the math here. So the 2% goes to 4%. So basically all of that additional percentage, all the additional tax you want either your housing or transportation. Is that correct?
Any other questions? Yep, Legislator Kitchen.
And then does the legislature decide then on what parts of housing initiative or
this is
is that coming up to the county to this executive to this? I mean, who decides?
Well, so if there are any other, if there are any
housing
yeah,
broad issues.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if there, so any initiatives, this is basically saying that it has to be allocated to those things in the budget, but any initiatives that would draw down that funding have to come before us.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Legislator Collins.
Also, just to be clear, this money does not need to be spent in the calendar year that it was collected.
Correct. It can accrue. Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Good.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Well, then I will entertain a resolution to adopt, entertain a motion to adopt resolution 167.
I'm open.
Sorry. Okay. Moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And then our last resolution for tonight is, I believe it's our last.
Yep.
Yep. Resolution 188, adopting a policy that being a licensed physician with experience in public health shall be a preferred criteria in the legislative confirmation of the appointment of the head of the Ulster County Department of Health. This is presented to us by Legislator Kovacs, who's not here. I don't know if anyone specific wants to speak about it. I can try. I think I understand what this is about, and I'm happy to try and frame it. But yes. Legislator Kitchen, if you would like to.
Spoke on this issue before. I think we deserve the best, and I think we should strive to find the most qualified candidate. And I still believe that we should have a licensed physician. I still believe that we should maybe, if we can't find any licensed physicians right away, at least 3 to 6 months. But I think we should obviously prefer to have the criteria of a licensed physician or with public health experience. So I don't know if anybody else wants to talk, but I'd be willing to entertain a motion.
Okay. Right. So we've got a lot of hands up. So I'm going to go with Collins, Harmon, Lopez, and McCullough.
I understand what this is trying to do. I don't understand how it works. Preferred criteria is what this is calling for. What does that mean in a hiring process? I'm not sure that I'm clear on how that affects hiring process. I mean, to me, if you have hiring process, you find the most qualified person. If that most qualified person doesn't happen to have a medical degree, he's still the most, she or she is still the most qualified person. And I believe that the county is always looking to hire the most qualified person, whether or not they have a specific academic degree or don't have an academic degree. So I don't know if this is doing anything more than what we'd do otherwise, so I'm not sure what the value of this is. I also don't necessarily agree that the most qualified person has to have a medical degree. I think that someone who has a large amount of experience in public health or I don't know the exact term, but basically has worked with pandemics, has worked with those kinds of things. That's what our issue has been and will probably continue to be. So I don't know that this is doing what it wants to do. I'm not sure how to get it to what it wants to be, other than saying, you know what, hire the most qualified person you can find, which I assume they're going to do anyway.
I saw your hand go up, Deputy Executive. Do you want to respond to that specifically? Otherwise, I'm going to keep going through the folks I have on the queue.
I do want to add to it a little bit, specific to the I can go at the end, though.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. All right, so Legislator Harmon, you're up.
Thank you.
Public Health Administration is its own area of expertise, separate from being a medical doctor. It is a separate graduate area of study that is at the nexus of understanding individual health needs and being able to speak doctor, right? Speak the medical language and be responsive to deployment, understand how social services come to bear on that. It is an entirely different animal. It is kind of like saying we must have a medical doctor to do this is sort of like saying the most qualified person to change the sheets in a nursing home would be the surgeon. If you've ever tried to take care of somebody with a surgeon, they have no idea what they are doing because it's not actually their area of expertise. The most qualified person is somebody who is an expert at public health administration, not a medical doctor. This actually harms the intended goal. It does not get us there.
Legislator Lopez?
Yeah, you know, I don't necessarily have an issue with this as much as I think it needs a point of clarification for me for it actually means. Like, what is this mandating that
prioritize?
But what's it asking you to do? What is the policy? Is the policy mandating that a licensed physician with experience has to be considered, or is it preferred? So I don't know what preferred is. And that's why I wish Legislator Kovacs here in order to clarify that a little bit. What's it actually telling you to do?
So I've got next Legislator McCullough, then we're going to do Deputy Executive Concurrence, and then we're going to go to Legislator.
You said you were going to finish. Okay.
Gregory?
Such a no point. I have an issue with the word preferred. The way it's written, it doesn't sound like it says preferred, but doesn't have to be absolute. So in that case, it doesn't seem like anything that we're doing differently now as it's common.
Deputy Executive concurs.
Yeah, to that point, I'm thinking of this from the implementation side and how it would impact our ability to hire. And if it were the case, so first of all, the charter change that we're proposing, in case this hasn't been extremely clear, it's to align with the state law. So the state law allows for counties to either have health commissioner who's a physician or a combination of a public health director and a medical consultant who needs to be a physician. Any public health director or commissioner that we hire needs to be actually approved by the state health commissioner. We are not able to unilaterally choose a candidate. They go through a vetting process at the state. Even if it is a public health director and a medical consultant, the state vets the combination of the two. And then they provide an official letter stating that the combination is qualified. So that's the process that we would go through. We would go through a search process, look for the most qualified candidate. As you all said, we're actually actively looking for a search firm to be able to help get do as thorough job as possible in getting applications. But we would go through that whole process. My concern with this preferred policy is that I'm worried that somebody wouldn't even, in order to get to a confirmation stage, you basically have to provide notice, right, to your employer, because the confirmation process is a public one. I'm concerned that somebody wouldn't want to do that if there's an extra policy that states that they would not be part of the preference. So that's where my mind goes as far as, you know, implementation and process goes. I worry that this will hurt.
Legislator Kitchen?
So I've been in government now for 17 years, local government.
And usually when you cannot find a candidate for a certain position, after searching for a candidate for a certain position that you're looking to hire for a position such as this, then you would come to the legislature or the governing body and say, listen, we've looked, we've searched, we cannot find a licensed medical practitioner. Will the legislator consider this? But the legislature is not even willing, since we do have a deputy, to give it some time to see if we can find a licensed medical practicing person. I don't understand what the rush is. It seems like it's one more thing tonight that's being rushed or heard about at the last minute, or it's urgent again at the last minute. I just think that we should wait and see what kind of candidates we get before we just jump into, you know, going with this policy. And that's been my stance all along. I have nothing more to say.
So I've got Legislator Collins and then Corcoran next, but I do want to speak on my behalf really quickly, just to bring a point into this that I don't think has been part of the conversation yet, which is this is happening now because Commissioner Smith has retired. Mm-hmm. And that happened, just speaking personally, a lot faster than I expected it would. But this is not a new issue. This was actually the recommendation to align with the state guidelines rather than add this extra guideline of hiring a doctor. That was recommended. That was part of the charter revisions that came from the Charter Revision Commission. And so we actually would have probably adopted this at the end of last year were it not for the fact that that bundle of recommendations had a couple of changes that I think related to the County Planning Board that folks didn't agree with, and it ended up getting voted down as a package. So we have these charter revisions that are hanging out there that need to get adopted, and as they become an issue, which this one did immediately because Commissioner Smith retired, then they're getting cherry-picked out of that bundle and being put before us. But it wasn't like when Commissioner Smith retired, you know, folks in the county executive's office or anywhere else were like, oh, why don't we do this now? That was something that our Charter Revision Commission that we appointed as a legislature made a recommendation to us to advance, and we failed to advance it. This wouldn't even be an issue had we advanced that at that time. So the question of it being a rush, the policy is not a rush. It is well thought out policy.
Understood.
That the Revision Commission worked on for a long time. Right. Doing it now is because we actually have to, we're actually facing this issue today, so we don't have the luxury of time. Legislator Collins.
You said what I was going to say, but I was going to say it.
Okay. Legislator Corcoran.
You answered most of what I had to say. The only question I would have to the exec's office, we don't have somebody lined up right now for this.
That's
we're doing interviews.
It would make sense.
Yeah. Well, we're not even, we haven't started doing, I think we started to schedule one interview. There's one medical doctor that had applied as of last week. Out of all the candidates that have applied, most of the applicants are not medical doctors for whatever reason.
Right, but it's the executive's position that we will do the interviews, and if it happens to be the medical doctor with the best person for the job, we would accept that.
Yeah.
Not saying we have to. I mean, I agree with what everybody's saying here, but so we're doing interviews and we don't have anybody lined up for this position as of today. We're not committed to anybody.
No.
Okay. That's not what I heard, but that's okay.
Legislator Kitchen.
Yeah, I got to comment on what Tom said. I mean, it just seems like there's somebody out there in the wings that's not a doctor, who's not a medically licensed person that we're trying to reach. And it just seems obvious. I don't know why we wouldn't put it out there first for documents. If we get nobody in the next couple of weeks, then you open it up to other people. We vote on it. I just don't understand. It just.
So it sounds like there's concerns around the question of the preferred criteria, you know, the actual mechanism here. Like if we're, you know, to me, it reads as a guideline that we're supposed to follow, but that we're supposed to follow, because we can't compel the county executive to do something amorphous, like prefer something. And so I have questions about the legal side of it.
The legal side of what?
the resolve, the single resolve clause here, what does it mean to prefer? Legislator Collins?
Just to play this out, my understanding of the process is that the county executive office will find the candidate that they think is the best candidate. They'll then present that candidate to the state, that will then verify whether that candidate is qualified or not, and they'll come back to us, and then at the very last thing, think, oh, you know what? We said no. So we've gone through this whole process of hiring someone, getting the state to certify if that person is qualified for the position, and then at the last end, last piece, if she doesn't happen to be a medical degree, we say no. We got to go all over again. So to me, that's a process that I don't want to be involved with, because they're already going through the process you go through and the process the state goes through. And I'm sure that the state has a very stringent process for qualification. Otherwise, why do it? So I don't see that this is helping us. I think it's going to hurt us.
Yeah.
So I can't support it.
That's where I'm at right now, personally. I'll defer, of course, to the committee, but, we could take a vote on it. We can certainly do that, or we can take no action on it. And I'm happy to do either.
I propose we vote on it.
Yeah.
I'll second.
I don't know that it has the votes to pass.
That's okay. It's still going to go to Ways and Means.
Yep. And there's always a petition to discharge if it didn't advance. Sometimes the quickest path forward is voting it down.
Good with it.
I do want to.
Mm-hmm. There's a process discussion.
Yeah, no, which I'm totally fine with. I'm not bothered by this at all, actually. I'm not being facetious. Like sometimes.
I just didn't know if you could hear
it. No, I know exactly what they're talking about. Exactly what I would be talking about, too. So does anyone have any feelings about me calling for a vote on this? So I would ask for a motion to adopt it. I'm also happy to, if no one wants to make a motion to adopt it, then it would, we would be taking no action. But I will now ask for a motion to adopt.
Motion to adopt.
All right, moved by Legislator Corcoran and seconded by Legislator Collins. There's
now,
a motion
the resolution
on the
that's in here?
On the resolution number 188. Yep.
To move it to the floor.
Well, to move it to Ways and Means, I'm going to ask for a vote in a minute because we now have a motion and a second on the table. Is there any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I count two ayes. All those opposed? I count four opposed. Craig, I didn't get an
aye.
Okay, so you're in favor or you're opposed?
I'll be in favor.
You're in favor. Okay, so we've got three in favor. We've got four opposed, so the amendment fails, or the resolution fails. It passed the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee. And that is our final resolution. We have no new business. We have no old business.
We should talk about the scheduling of the subcommittee.
Yeah, let's talk about that, but let's adjourn the meeting first before we do that. And we can let folks from the county executive team get their day on. So I will entertain a motion to adjourn. I saw Eric's hand first, so I'll take Jeff the second here. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.